Hello and welcome to this episode of Let's Talk About by Kangaroo Mind. I am Vedika and today we have with us Dhruvi Mehta. Our conversation with Dhruvi today is going to center around understanding women's mental health. Dhruvi is a psychologist and a mental health consultant at Project Nyari. Dhruvi has an MA in clinical psychology and has been working as an assistant professor and continues her work as a counselor. Her work is rooted in empathy, genuineness, and unconditional positive regard. At Project Nyari, she provides mental health support to women, aims to create safe spaces where individuals can feel validated, supported, and seen. Before we begin our conversation with Dhruvi today, we would like to put out our trigger warning for our audiences. If at any point during this conversation, should you find yourself feeling triggered or distressed, we urge you to take a step back and look after yourself. Should you need any additional support resources, you can also find them on our website. And now, without taking much time, let's hear more from Dhruvi. Dhruvi, welcome to the episode. It's great to have you with us today.
Thank you for having me, Vedika. It's really nice to be on
Thank you, Dhruvi. And of course, with the work that you do, the work that you've been involved with Project Nyari, and of course, as us, as two young women having this conversation, I think we're going to have lots to talk about through the course of our discussion. And
it.
about the work that you've been doing. But before we start, I think before we get into women's mental health and lots of the nuanced topics, how would you say women's mental health is different from men's mental health?
That's a really great question to begin with. When we're talking about differences between men and women's mental health, I think it's very important to acknowledge the differences in the stressors that men and women experience, how stress manifests, and how they cope with it, right? So for women, they're more likely to internalize stress. So, for instance, they're more likely to have greater critical self-talk, low self-esteem, feelings of anxiety, depression, sadness, experiencing worthlessness. Because the world is patriarchal at large, right? And we constantly have to prove ourselves. And when we're talking about proving ourselves, there's doubt. Right? Am I good enough? Can I do this? Like, for example, women today are balancing both. They'll be the ones breaking the glass ceiling, but also they're the one cooking the meal at home. So you have to prove yourself everywhere. You have to prove yourself at work. You have to prove yourself as a caregiver because of the societal expectations around it. So much of these external, so many of these external messages are internalized. And that is sort of like the base for the concerns that women face. When it comes to men, they're more likely to externalize stress. So you might see more of anger, irritability, substance use concerns. They also have a lot of pressure to achieve, perform, provide. They're supposed to be invulnerable. Men don't cry. Men are not supposed to be emotional. And that's why more often than not, their mental health concerns are very likely to go unrecognized. And there's a lot of research around women being more likely to seek social support as compared to men. But there's a lot of stigma around mental health concerns that both men and women face. So, yeah, those are the concerns, and coping is something that something where mental health professionals come in to help build resources along with therapy.
I think, you've touched upon a lot of things that we're going to come to later in the conversation, whether it's around stigma or whether it's, around social expectations, gender roles, especially of women. But what are some mental health issues that, you feel that affect women more than they affect men?
Definitely chronic stress, burnout, quite a bit for women because you're managing so much. Women are also more likely to experience body-based concerns like psychosomatic conditions, stress manifesting in the body, chronic shoulder pain, chronic back pain, autoimmune diseases are also more likely to be there when it comes to the reproductive health bit. They're more like, I mean, PCOS, PCOD are concerns that women face. There's also PMDD, which is premenstrual dysphoric disorder. So that is essentially a more severe form of PMS that we know that occurs during the days before the menstrual, like your period begins, essentially. Right? That is there. More likely to face, definitely exclusive to women, right? Like miscarriages that they might face. Postpartum depression is another piece. And we'll talk about these bits as well, but also trauma, sexual, like in regards to sexual violence, intimate partner violence, domestic violence is way more prevalent for women.
I think even as you touched upon, I feel like, when we come to the whole aspect about women seeking help and women talking about it, I think that also goes a long way in sort of, aiding recovery. Or maybe that could also be a reason why more women are diagnosed with certain mental health conditions. So whether it's eating disorders and things as opposed to women, right?
Eating, like, missed out on that. Eating disorders, body image concerns.
So,
Definitely.
you were talking about, like, specific events in women's lives. And so when we look at specific events in women's lives, so, like life stages, do you feel like that also has a significant impact on the mental health of women?
I feel like it's not just one particular life stage. Like, of course, there are some stages that definitely come to mind initially, like the adolescence period, where your periods begin, and also the menopause period during the middle age. But there are challenges all across the lifespan. So, for instance, let's begin with the infancy period. There's a preference for the male child over the female child in many households even today. So what is the impact of that on that infant, right? During short term and long term, right? Is there a possibility of neglect even if it's from one parental figure over the other? So the message of not being valued is something that individual is around right from the time they're stepping into the world, right? Even during the childhood period then, male education is prioritized over female education. Access to education may be taken away. You're required to do household duties and caregiving tasks at home, right? So what if you have aspirations beyond that? So you're during the childhood period, they might, like, women, like girls might feel really, really limited and constricted. And I've had clients who are highly educated describing their childhood experiences where they've heard things like, you're going to leave very soon. This is not your house. You're going to get married eventually. A very subtle ways, like food is given to the male members of the family rather than the female members. Or like the male members might get more ghee than the female members. Right? So very subtle ways. So the basic need of wanting to feel like you belong is limited or even taken away. Right? And then of course you have the adolescent period wherein you have menarche, which is the onset of your periods. Is there enough access to education around it? Is there access to menstrual hygiene products? Is there, like, because if there isn't, there's so much shame and secrecy around it, and girls might feel so confused. And also during this period, now with the advent of social media, especially, there are so many standards regarding how you're supposed to look, you're supposed to be thin, but like very naturally, like you're developing your chest during that time period, your fat percentage is going to increase. There's so much to navigate. Your self image is impacted right there and then, and that like eating disorders like anorexia, binge eating, bulimia might begin at a stage as early as that. And then during the adulthood period, like we spoke earlier, you're navigating between personal aspirations, societal expectations, both of them, right? Are you going to choose a stream that like is more like women dominated than male dominated? Are you, do you have to choose a career, for instance, where you can balance both the household like duties and like get in the money? Then there's so much like at the workplace that you're also navigating. You have to prove yourself. There's gender-based discrimination that takes place at the workplace. So chronic stress right there. And then you have the middle age period wherein again menopause, but even perimenopause not recognized. Women may be judged. Like you see, like very recently, like my mom began her menopause period and she experiences hot flashes. And now I consciously take time to sort of take a moment to be there with her. Like, okay, babe, let's have some water and relax. Because earlier I also didn't understand. And even in old age, women are continuing the caregiving thing. And of course, it's a strength, right? We nurture, like our nurturing ways are our strength. But I come from a place of, is there a moment where we can acknowledge that it might be really exhausting sometimes?
No, and I think, when we talk about things like patriarchy or even sort of women in workplaces, right? Like in a capitalistic world, it is very, it's very like people often wonder that, is it going to be that if you hire women, typically women face questions around, like, even if it's just at the job interview, right? Like, are you married? Are you not married? Are you, are you looking at starting a family? What is your family background? But I don't think we have those kind of expectations from men. And like just the profile of a person, especially for women, is so often not determined by how qualified they are, how educated they are, but so much by like, just them as, who are you as per that social norm. So when we talk about social norms, social expectations, gender roles, like we have certain perceptions on what it means to be a woman. Like you're supposed to be, as you said, nurturing, caregiving, empathetic, kind. You're supposed to balance like everything in this whole world, but still you're supposed to, be like calm. You're not allowed to have like, you can't have angry moments. You can't have outbursts. You can't be venting. You can't be ranting, because suddenly all of that is very socially unacceptable. But coming back to the whole social expectations, gender roles, and of course, how sort of social media has now changed the way we, look at women, we look at sort of womanhood also in a way. How do you think that impacts a woman's mental health?
Social expectations, like again coming back to the life stages, they're constantly there, right? Like now specifically when it comes to social media, there that comes one more source of expectations. So I also worry about the younger generation who has greater access to social media and how it's going to impact them. Because you see girls very young, like beginning to diet, for instance. And that's because that's the message, right? You're supposed to look a certain way. You're supposed to talk a certain way. You're supposed to have makeup on a certain way. So it the there are a lot of expectations around that for sure. Yeah, that is essentially what comes to mind when we talk about the social media piece. But I also know that, I also really love, like I've had experience in teaching So I also love the Gen Z kids a lot because there's a lot of mental health awareness as well on social media, and a lot of them are very discerning also about, okay, what should I follow, what should I not follow, right? What is like a valid resource versus what is not. And I remember initially being like, oh, I would have never done this when I was a student. But then experience, they're very good at recognizing changes from their baseline in terms of how they're feeling. They're great at acknowledging exhaustion when it shows up for them. They're amazing at asking for a mental health day when they need it. And in my mind also, these were like, okay, they're just being lazy initially, because those were the messages that we got when we were students, right? And I'm 26, I'm like, it was still there. And with the advent of social, like especially during the COVID time period, a lot of mental health pages really showed up. So a lot of them are really aware as well. And when they show so much self-compassion, it also teaches you to sort of sit back and apply that to yourself. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, I think you've touched upon, like how just social media kind of creates this whole impact, what somebody should be like. And of course, like you touched upon diet culture and that whole body dysmorphia that comes with social media. And I think it's interesting that you brought up the whole thing around, kids wanting to diet, because I think there was some very interesting research, right, that even you must have seen, that it's, I think, kids between the age of 6 and 10 now have started, they fear being fat, or they're unsatisfied with the way that they look, and they're starting to get into diets. And you really feel that, where does this come from? But I think so much of it goes back to gender roles and like cultural influences and social expectations, and of course social media just kind of fuels that further, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Especially for women, we expect how we should look, how we should dress, what we should wear, what we should not wear.
Oh, 100%. I feel like a lot of perception is social media and society driven. And it's interesting that, when we think about societal expectations from women, we think about, gender roles, we think about, everything that society feels that a woman should be, and how social media kind of adds to it, right? Like whether it's on to filters, whether it's in terms of how it's supposed to look, whether it's Photoshop, whether it's editing. And how much of comparison comes in through social media, right? But coming back to gender roles, right? And like cultural influences, cultural expectations, I think for women, we briefly touched upon, patriarchy, smashing glass ceilings, but also glass slippers, all of that. And do you want to talk a little bit about, like, where do you feel that these things kind of take a, hit on women's mental health?
Let's probably zoom in into understanding what the life of a woman might look like. Right? She's going to wake up really early. She's going to cook for the family. She's going to get dressed. She's going to probably be traveling by train if she's in Bombay, like for instance. Right? Like talking about like a urban working woman, or however she travels, she's going to get to office, probably works 9 to 5, has to be great at her job, has to really prove herself, has to compete with her male colleagues who are there, to get the promotion, right? Like, because like you mentioned earlier, like, are you going to be considered for a particular role because you're capable, or is the fact that you're a woman going to come into play, and are you going to have to work harder to prove yourself? And how does that bit impact a woman throughout? Like, do you have enough support at the workplace, for instance? Like, I have clients wherein these women are the only women at the workplace where all of their other colleagues are males. So when you're working 9 to 5, and you don't have support, You're very likely to question yourself. Am I doing like am I okay in the work that I'm doing? There's a lot of like, if there are two members in a team and one is a male versus one is a female, like the senior people are more likely to call upon the men and brief them and ask them. They're like, okay, am I incapable? Am I not doing enough? But it's not you, it's how the system is working. Right? And then you go back home and you're still doing all the household chores that are to be done. And there was a really nice poem that we had when we were in school, and it was something on the lines of, there's an entire route a woman has to take before she goes to bed. It's not like the bed is here and you're here and you go to sleep. Especially mothers, right? Like, there's an entire list of chores and things that you have to do. And then you get to bed. Right? Or there are a lot of reels on how when you wake your mother up from her sleep, she's going to wake up in shock. Why is she waking up in shock if she's taking an afternoon nap? Because she's constantly on the go. That naps and sleep might also not be restful. Is there enough sleep that she's getting? Right? And these are all expectations that she has to fulfill. You have to financially provide for the family and you have to take care of your children. Even if the children go for babysitting, for instance, like, oh, usne apne bacche ko udhar chhod diya. She's not there for her child. Right? There's so much stigma that comes into play when what we really need is support.
So interesting, because you spoke about, like, women in the workplace, and how women have to constantly prove themselves. And sometimes I feel like, women proving themselves in the workplace doesn't just start once you get the job. It starts literally when you apply for a job. Because it goes, like, unfortunately for women, I think they have to prove themselves even harder, as you said, because right at the resume level, like, the amount of judgment that, women face, and you would have seen it, even, I mean, I've seen it in the corporate space, that the profile that comes through because of social norms and, gender roles and things, like, suddenly, is this person married or not married? If they're not married, are they planning to get married? In which case, are they going to leave this job? And if they're newly married, then, what if they have children and they decide to, take a break or leave this job? So
That's
suddenly,
a that's seen as a really like somebody taking an off, very valid off because they're pregnant, or like the maternity leave that they take. That's not looked on very well at some organizations.
and interestingly, none of those expectations are there on men, right? Like, how, like, a married woman will suddenly be having a very different profile in terms of, how she's perceived in terms of, maturity, responsibility, as opposed to a young, not unmarried, or someone who is separated, or any of those things. So just the way we, I mean, it all comes back to that whole societal perception around women, right? But since we're talking about women in relationships and things, I don't think we talk enough about, like, things like, trauma coming from intimate partner violence, domestic abuse, any kind of assault and things. So can you shed a little bit of light on, how do these things impact a woman's mental health? And what should women actually be looking out for? Because a lot of women may not even recognize abuse.
I want to talk about that piece first, you know. When we're talking about intimate partner violence, it is very difficult to recognize violence in those moments, right? What is the cycle of violence like? There might be an activating event that takes place where violence happens. But after that, there might be a honeymoon period where this person, like the partner perpetrating the violence, has come in, has apologized, and everything is really, really sweet and great for a period of time. You're like, okay, that was a one-time incident. But then once the woman, or like She starts to feel more empowered, take decisions by herself that might trigger the partner again, which might lead to an other activity where violence takes place again. Because how dare you exercise control wherein control is in my hands? But there's also absolute denial of that control. So that's how the cycle of violence goes on. And it's very difficult to recognize because you're dealing with so many emotions and there is attachment. So the need for safety and the need for attachment at the same time can be very, very confusing, which is why it becomes difficult to leave these relationships. Right? So a woman is not at fault if it takes her some time or if she finds it very difficult to leave that relationship. Yeah, and that's where I think where we come in, wherein we can probably educate on forms of violence. Violence may be in the form of manipulation, control, emotional violence, verbal abuse, physical abuse, sexual abuse, financial abuse, even. And we can see physical abuse, right? It's visible when it happens, if it is at an extreme, but sexual violence is hidden, emotional violence is hidden, verbal abuse is hidden. So bringing awareness on that, and also bringing in awareness on the sexual violence, on the cycle of violence. Sometimes the honeymoon period might also not be there at all. It might just be activating event, being triggered again, activating event, being triggered again, activating event. Right? So providing information on that, providing information on, there are a lot of special cells. There are protecting officers who are in place. There are helplines that you can reach out to. Keep the police number handy for your area, like for the state, for instance, so that you can always reach out for help. So having that. And the way in which intimate partner violence, domestic violence, sexual violence, violence of any kind impacts. Of course, there's depression, there's anxiety, but there's also post-traumatic stress disorder and complex post-traumatic stress disorder. So PTSD is related to one traumatic event, but when there are multiple traumatic events of multiple types, that also that leads to complex PTSD, wherein along with PTSD symptoms, there might be a lot of difficulty with emotional regulation. Because mental health is not just up here, and especially when traumatic events happen, it impacts the entire body, so the nervous system is impacted. So it's a really, really severe impact that happens on women and even other things like acid attacks, for instance. Again, something that's exclusive to women as compared to anybody else, right? That bit is also there. So we need a lot of education and awareness around that in the society for sure.
So, we were talking about the different issues that women face around, what's going to contribute to poor mental health. So, can you tell us a little bit about the work that, Project Nyari is doing and that, you're also doing, as, the role that you have within Project Nyari to sort of support the mental health of women?
So, Project Nyari was founded by Navya Nanda and Mansi Chaudhary. We turned two last year. So we provide legal awareness sessions and mental health support sessions. They are pro bono, they are free of cost. And we recently completed 750 plus sessions overall. We work with women above the age of 18 all across India. And the primary concerns that we worked with so far include domestic violence, intimate partner violence, sexual harassment. We also work with adjustment concerns as well. So that is the work we do. And We try our best to provide mental health support, connect women with other resources on the mental health front, like support groups, psychiatric help if that is needed. We connect you with independent practitioners as well. So, because we understand that mental health doesn't work in isolation. It doesn't work just in a one-on-one session, but at the community level at large. So it's very important to also connect them to various resources, and the legal awareness wing also does the same.
Right. No, I think, the work that, y'all are doing is very inspirational. And I hope for people who are watching this who aren't familiar with Project Nyari or, anybody looking out for support does sort of, connect with you and the resources that y'all have at Project Nyari. But, we spoke about community support and you just touched upon that, mental health is not in isolation. It's not just a health issue. It's much more than, just healthcare. It's much more than just one person, especially for women, right? Like, given the world that we live in, whether it's patriarchy, whether it's capitalism, or whether it's just generally the social norms around womanhood, gender norms, sort of what it's expected, what does it mean to be a woman? So, when we talk about supporting women with their mental health, like, what are some things that, you could suggest that, friends, family, communities, colleagues could do to support women in their lives who might be struggling with their mental health?
I think really educate yourself, recognize your own biases. Again, the gender roles that we spoke of, the stereotypes, prejudices are very ingrained, which is why we discriminate. Recognize those, do the work, educate yourself. So, very simple things like don't make fun of the posh training, don't make stupid wife jokes, excuse my language, but because women have internalized so much on a day-to-day basis, since they've stepped into the world, we don't need more of that. So just educate yourself and be aware. I mean, that's like the most basic thing I think we can do. On the community level, I think there can be a lot. There can probably be a lot more spaces for sharing. That would really help. It takes one person to start a conversation. More opportunities for women to be at leisure. More spaces for that. Like, so much of the infrastructure around us is not built by women for women. So if we could have that, like, what, just look, something as simple as bathroom spaces, right? Like, why are the queues so long? Like, for women bathrooms, like, are they even designed for women? Don't we need a little bit more space to wash our hands, put on our makeup if we want to? Yeah, like, don't we need more space rather than just the bathrooms? Or sanitary pads, having that in there's a lot more equipment that is needed in the bathroom, or spaces for women to gather and talk to each other. Are they like, is the world around us designed for women at all? Another bit is regarding policy changes. Have trainings like POSH. It's important, and the follow-ups are also equally important. Other bits like, maybe we could have mental health professionals during legal proceedings for survivors of sexual violence, for instance, rape, for that matter, where it's really re-triggering to narrate your experience again. So having that support in some way, maybe, or even when you're narrating it to the police, because you could do it so many times. And that is really, really re-triggering, and you can't be, there's so much pressure to not be emotional, to sound really confident, because you want to indicate that, okay, no, this happened. You need a lot of support, and so many women have to do it by themselves. So maybe things like that.
No, I think that is really important, just the need for safe spaces, for safe conversations around like women's mental health and things. But before we get into how we can do that more, I'm gonna ask you a little bit about the stigma. You would have seen it firsthand. Julie, what do you feel is some of the stigma that exists around women's mental health? And how do you feel that that impacts women? You know, whether it's about speaking up, whether it's about, you know, asking for help, whether it's about sticking through with recovery as well.
I feel like so much of what women feel is so normalized. That stigma begins right there. As a, you're supposed to be burnt out. Of course you're going to be tired. Of course you're going to have, like, किसने बोला था काम करने के लिए? घर पे बैठो. All of that. It's almost like you're punished for also following your aspirations and hopes and dreams. Even now, like in our lives, when we talk about, okay, like I don't think I'll be the one cooking. So, like, your mother-in-law is going to beat you up if you can't cook. It's something that we hear very often. So, there are so many things that are just normalized. Women are supposed to be emotionally resilient all the time. And, you know, like when it comes to mental health, I don't think mental health is a thing yet as well, right? There's definitely more awareness than there was before, but do we have enough awareness to go and reach out for help, especially when everything is so normalized? So that, because mental health concerns exist on a spectrum. We don't have to wait till it gets to a point of distress for you to go and seek support. So we need a lot of education and awareness, because I think that, like, the root of it is that just everything is just so normalized.
Very true. And do you feel somewhere that, you know, media, mass media, the kind of cinema we watch, the kind of OTT content we consume also somewhere plays a role, right? Like in how we've sort of normalized violence against women almost. Or like, you know, as you said, like the jokes that people forward on WhatsApp, the things we casually talk about that, you know, if you're getting married, you have to know how to cook. Or how can you be working, or you know, sometimes I'm sure even as a mental health professional, you must have seen stigma that, you know, is this really what you're gonna do? You know, how are you gonna settle down in your life? This is gonna take a toll on your family life. But I don't think men somewhere face that much stigma, or just those many sort of barriers to their professional life, as you said. But you spoke about Gen Z, you work with Gen Z, you teach Gen Z as well. So, are you somewhere seeing sort of generational shifts in the way women perceive and address mental health now?
I remember one particular lecture when, and I used to teach development in psychology, and I had this conversation with students, and I saw the boys in class express how they don't help their moms, and some of them just couldn't relate. It's like I don't do this anymore at home, right? I do help my mom out whenever she needs it. For instance, I don't make fun of women. Like, I know that, like, for instance, they even know how to respond if a girl gets her period. Like, they'll be kinder, they'll be nicer, they would want the support, ensure that she's feeling okay. So there doesn't have to be secrecy and shame around things that we experience on a day-to-day basis. So I did see those shifts firsthand, and it was really warm to acknowledge. But at the same time, I'm also talking about the urban context, right? Like, I live in Mumbai. And I'm also speaking from a place of privilege and about people who also come from a place of privilege. And I'm not very sure about what it looks like in other parts of the country as much, because things go underreported. There's not as much research done. So I don't think I can make a generalized statement on that, but yeah, first-hand experiences do make me feel really warm and hopeful.
And, you know, as a mental health professional, just keeping in mind, you know, like the whole gender sensitivity and things, how do you think mental health professionals can sort of build in that gender sensitivity, the inclusivity, the compassion towards women and issues around women's mental health in their practice?
Educate yourself, recognize your own biases,
Mm.
be in regular supervision with a trained professional, like in this particular area. Be open to learning and unlearning. It's very important. Like, yeah, there are so many cases where our biases might show up in session. Very simple things like, do you have a bias against people being in a live-in relationship? And on one hand, you might be like, okay, no, I'm very open. But you were also grown up around narratives that say that, oh, that means that you don't want to commit and like all of those narratives. And they might impact as to how you're showing up in session as a mental health professional. Right? So address your biases. Acknowledge them, understand what's operating on an unconscious level, how it's showing up in session. A great way to do that is get feedback from your clients. Always ask for feedback because you also want to cater the sessions to their needs. So two things, right? Working on yourself and working with a supervisor who's also very, very, who's very gender, who understands the unique life stressors that women face. Train yourself. For instance, if you're working particularly, like, there are very few trainings in women's mental health. It was really surprising for me when I went through it. So there will be trainings on intimate partner violence. There might be some trainings on sexual and reproductive health as well. But I haven't seen as many courses or trainings on women's mental health or even books on women's mental health for that matter. So I think we need a lot more work in that area. And if I'm wrong, like I need these resources to educate myself further.
No, I definitely feel that, you know, we may not have enough gender-specific resources available. And given that, you know, how we started off our conversation with, you know, the difference between women's mental health and men's mental health, and it's beyond gender. There's so much more, you know, that women experience in their lives. Not to discredit the issues men go through, because that's a whole separate conversation, and we've had that conversation, you know, like, each sort of gender has different challenges. But when we talk about women's mental health, you're right. It is important to kind of look at it from a very specific frame of reference, kind of check in our own biases, because we've grown up with like a lot of narratives, right? Like, whether they're cultural, whether they're coming from media and now social media and things. We spoke about, like, you know, we need more conversations about women's mental health. We need to counter the stigma. So how do you think we can do that?
I think having conversations like the one we're having right now. Another bit, you know, like from what we've said so far, and when we talk about women's mental health and how it's different from men's, you know, it's not against men, it's against the patriarchal system. Because that also impacts men. It's not like it doesn't. Because there's a lot going on for them as well because mental health is latent, right? It's invisible. We don't know. And a lot of concerns are going unrecognized for them as well. Having said that, coming back to how can we sort of challenge and break the stigma? I think it begins with like there's a very nice YouTube channel by this film critic called Sucharita, and she talks about like women telling women stories. So maybe having more films made by women telling women stories at that level, having more women communities, more support groups maybe, or just friend groups where you can just show up. I really hope and pray for spaces for women to rest. There's a very nice Instagram page called Women at Leisure, wherein this person just photographs women at leisure. It's really great, right? Because rarely do we see that. So I think we need to begin by talking about
Rarely do we see it, rarely do we socially accept it, right? Like, are women allowed to just take a break, or are we going to be like, she's lazy, neglecting
Oh
her
my God.
duties, like, or if even some mother, like, as you sp we spoke about it, that you're not being a good mother, you're not being a good daughter, you're not being a good wife, you're not being a good sister, you're not being a good this, that. Like, so many roles come into, being women and how women are perceived in sort of the lifestyles that they lead and, the choices that they get to make and all the judgment that comes. But keeping that judgment aside, what would you say are some lifestyle choices that, women can make? Or, like, little things that they can incorporate into their lives, like even if they're small self-care tips to sort of better support their mental health.
I think it can just begin with taking some time out for yourself. Self-care doesn't have to be elaborate. You don't have to spend a lot of money to engage in self-care. It can be something as simple as taking out intentional time for yourself. Just begin there. Self-compassion is another piece, very important, because the critical self-talk is so much, so frequent, so intense. And because of the societal expectations, norms, they become so believable. So, self-compassion, just recognizing how you talk to yourself, talk to yourself like you were talking to a friend, for instance. Something as basic as that is where you can begin. Because like lifestyle changes will be hard to make because you're already doing so much. So it's like a bowl of noodles, right? Like a lot of dietitians talk about this. Like you'll have a bowl of noodles. It's not the most nutritious thing. But what can you add to make that bowl more nutritious? Right? So it may not be possible for everybody to engage in self-care or make lifestyle changes because it's a luxury for so many people. So what is your paneer? What is your fiber that you can add to your movie bowl, right? So that's self-compassion, basic thing.
No, I think that's very interesting because I think, you also acknowledge that everyone doesn't come from the same space of privilege. Different people are going to go through life very differently. So one thing I think we can all do is sort of, be compassionate towards ourselves. We're going to recognize when you're struggling, not sort of, hold back from asking for help, having healthy boundaries, taking time.
Yeah.
It's hard to take time off, especially in like a capitalistic world. I think not just for women, but
So many
everybody.
tell like there's a lot there's I was listening to to this talk by Dr. Aditi Narodkar, if I'm not wrong, and she was stating that research shows that even 10 seconds of time taken out intentionally is also helpful. 2 minutes, 5 minutes, take a breather, take a breath, have water, yawn. Break all the norms and yawn.
Yeah, I think so. A lot of things that we take for granted, but we don't realize how hard it is to actually put that into practice. And for a lot of people, right, given the situations and circumstances that they come from. But Dhruvi, to wrap up this great conversation that we've had, and I know we've touched upon lots of things which are going to resonate with a lot of, not just women, but a lot of men as well, because we spoke about patriarchy, we spoke about how men can also be supportive of women in their lives. So I think we've had a very inclusive conversation for Women's Day. And I think this goes beyond, urban setting, rural setting, subcontinent setting, global setting, because I think a lot of issues that women face in terms of societal norms, in terms of like expectations economically, family-wise, kind of transcend borders. It's just that there'll be some cultural nuances, but I think a lot of the issues are very universal. But again, to wrap up everything we spoke about, if you could have any parting words for somebody who's watching this or listening to this, who might be having a hard time with their mental health, what would that be?
Like also speaking to women and knowing the prevalence of violence in its various forms. I know that a lot of beliefs that show up might be, it's my fault, I was so stupid, how did I not see this coming? I deserve this maybe sometimes because the societal beliefs are so strong that it's very hard to believe them. I really want to reinforce that if something like that has happened, it is not your fault. And I would really encourage you to reach out for support, irrespective of what you're going through. It doesn't have to get to a point of really high distress. And also knowing that, like at Project Nyari, we provide free of cost services. Like you can check it out. We're a digital project. Online sessions are available with us and support is there.
Thank you so much, Dhruvi, for your time, for all your insights. I think it's been a very enriching and informative session. And it was great to have you to, share your experiences and the work that you're doing, along with the work that Project Nyari is doing as well to support women, in their struggles and just through whatever life kind of throws at them. And lastly, for anyone who's watching or listening to this, if you're having a hard time with your mental health, we hope you remember that, you don't have to go through this alone. There is help out there and it gets better. And you deserve to feel better. So please reach out, talk to someone, just hold on to that hope that you don't have to go through it alone. So till next time, please stay well and stay healthy. Thank you.